Aaron Lewis, an astrophysicist and cosmetologist from the cosmetologist. I don't know if Jaron is into cosmetology, but he's definitely into cosmology at the Sydney Institute for Astronomy to find out more. Jaron, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Now, as an astrophysicist and a Star Wars fan, what is it that draws you to the series? Is there a little something extra there for you?
Oh, you know, being a scientist watching a science fiction movie is pleasure and pain because of course, we love the science fiction. We love the stories. We love the settings, all this kind of thing. But it's very hard to watch it without a scientific eye and just asking yourself, hang on, is that actually possible?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I try not to bore my friends too much by overanalyzing the movies. But, yeah, it can be tricky at times.
How well is science represented in the franchise, especially these days?
Well, it's a mix. There are definitely some things that they are getting right in the movies. Of course, we see different kinds of planets with different kinds of climates. You see desert planets and frozen planets. And we see planets orbiting multiple stars. So Luke's home planet, Tatooine, that orbits a binary star. So he has two suns in the sky. And whereas we've only got one here, but there are plenty of places in the universe where planets look up at two or even three suns.
Wow.
So that kind of thing is actually reasonably accurate. But, you know, on the flip side, there's an awful lot of scientific inaccuracies that, you know, really sort of... looking at it too seriously, you try to go, no, you can't do that.
Mm. Is there anything in particular that really kind of annoys you when you're watching a Star Wars film and you think, God, that's just not realistic at all?
Well, there's a couple of things. The first big one, which most people probably know, is that you know, there's no sound in space. So when you see the space battles, there would actually be effectively incomplete silence. But of course, who'd want to watch a space battle where there are no explosions and weapons being fired?
No, the little pew 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 in Star Wars,
yeah, exactly.
Is iconic.
and the other one, which is when I'm a big fan of space battles in science fiction, but when you see space battles, they're always very up close, and the vehicles used, they fly around like aircraft, which is not surprising because apparently George Lucas got a lot of inspiration from sort of World War II movies about how combat should be played out with air vehicles in the air. You transplant that to space, and so you get things whizzing around like airplanes did in World War II. But that's not how spaceships fly. You don't need to bank in a turn in the same way you do in an aircraft. So the sort of the actual aspects of how they portray battles are very unscientific, but of course they're very exciting from the science fiction point of view.
Absolutely. It must be a very interesting battle within your own mind to be like, oh, this is so cool, oh, but it's so wrong, oh, but it's so cool.
I know. but I also think it's good. It's a good way to teach science.
Yeah.
Ask somebody, when you watch a science fiction movie, what aspects do you think are realistic and which aspects do you think are the fiction and the fantasy parts?
Absolutely.
Because you can then really dig into where we are with science, which I think is a very important aspect.
Now, speaking of where we are with science, the original Star Wars film was released back in 77. That's, you know, a fair time has passed. Do you think that as science has progressed, we've kind of improved our science fiction as well?
There's always a little bit of an interplay between science and science fiction. I mean, there are clearly a lot of scientists interested in science fiction, and so, you know, ideas sort of do flop back and forth between the two. I don't know if the writers of Star Wars have been overly informed by how science has progressed, but other aspects of science fiction, of course, are grasping onto ideas that we see in science, and in science, as I said, we do grasp onto ideas that we see in science fiction. So yeah, things evolve, but I said, I guess the writer of a Star Wars movie, the goal is to make as much money as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
So you want the biggest, flashiest story as possible.
It's not necessarily to tell an accurate representation of what the cosmos around us is like.
That's correct.
Do you think that the popularity of science fiction and especially a saga and a series like Star Wars has popularized it for people? You mentioned there that it's a great way to learn about space and to use it as a teaching tool. Do you think that this has kind of pushed more people towards the sciences, especially astrophysics?
Well, I have my own personal story. You mentioned that Star Wars is from a long time ago. I'm from even before Star Wars. So I grew up in Britain in the 1970s on British television sci-fi, which was Doctor Who and a TV series called Blake 7, which some of your listeners might know.
Yeah.
And that's what drew me into science, was thinking about the science around science fiction. And it's a stereotype. It's not strictly true that lots of scientists are, you know, Star Trek fans, etc. But there is that exposure to science and even science fiction as the youngster that sparks some interest, which leads people into the science and technology field.
It's very nice to think that some kids might be sitting in the cinemas this week watching the new Star Wars film and being inspired into a career in the STEM kind of field. Geraint, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. That was Dr. Geraint Lewis there chatting to us about the science fiction.